Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 209, Something Borrowed and Something Blue. I am May, and I am here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
We recap DCTV in a flash. You can usually contact us over on Twitter at DCTV Gumption, where you can also follow along with our live tweeting. You can email us all your lovely thoughts to ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Send us your asks to Tumblr at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. And you can listen to all of our podcasts, our previous podcasts, over on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you do not support us on Patreon,
then screw you.
We do have a Patreon where we discuss all things outside of DCTV, except for like the HBO Max DCTV stuff, which includes Titans Doom Patrol. We've also done Peacemaker. We've done Netflix series like You. We've done Wednesday. We've done Bridgerton. We've done some MCU stuff. So all the things that you would like us to talk about or that we are interested in talking about, that is where you will find our thoughts. So you can subscribe to Patreon at patreon.com/DCTVGumption. We do not have any news this week, shockingly. I think that there was a lot of...
We should talk about the writer's strike.
I was about to say, we can say we support the writers, we support WGA.
Absolutely. Yes, we support WGA, we support the strike. I don't know how many of our listeners were around or remember, rather, like the strike of 2007, but it was dark times.
It was. We lost many a good show because of that strike.
Yes, we did. And all because, you know, networks and studios don't want to pay the writers their due. So
yep.
I saw some of the checks too, like point to like, what, 2 cents?
Yes,
and
3 cents.
$8. It was so ridiculous.
For it, like, for an episode? Like residual
Yeah, residuals.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, what's his name? Dante Basco, that he played like Rufio in Peter Pan movie and what's his face in Avatar. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But in, like, he would do like, I think it was like TikToks that showed like how much his residuals were, like his residual checks were. And they could either, you know, buy him like a fancy steak dinner, or he could like go to McDonald's. Like, it just ranges from how much like money that you get from this stuff. And it's like, it feels really super inconsistent, because as much money as, you know, networks and big studios make residuals, some of that should be going to like the writers and the actors. I wonder, I bet Friends, those actors probably banded together and made sure they got residual money from their show. But
yeah, and even the writers for Friends still get like a good amount of residuals, because like the times were different back then. And now I feel like what was it, the statistic was like from the last 10 years actually writers get paid less than they did just 10 years ago, which is wild. So we live in some dark times. So hopefully there will be solutions that will provide the writers like a living wage and more, because I think that's just the fact that like who was it? Was the writer for The Handmaid's Tale? He was like, I accepted an Emmy for the show, and he was like driving Uber on the side. Like, this is how bad
I saw someone else.
Oh my God.
They were on like a hit show, about to accept an award, and the same day or same week they got denied a job at Target or something.
Oh wow. Jeez.
How did you get denied a job at Target?
I don't know.
That's so sad. Sad because Target has strange standards. I used to work there. But yeah, so we definitely support the writers and hope that they will get their due. Otherwise, it is kind of dry in the news arena, and it'll probably be dry for a while now, because without writers, we don't have anything else. They are the base of everything. Writers need, or actors need dialogue. Directors need a script.
Oh, was it like the Rings of Power was like, we're going to continue filming with no
no
directors or whatever.
House of the Dragon 2.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a shit show.
And I'm like, your season one, especially of Lord of the Rings, season one was already not so hot. So are you really trying to like degrade from there? I don't know.
Considering all the money that they spent, I think would think that they would be smarter than that, but
exactly. You like you've already invested so much. I think you can put on pause. I think you're gonna lose less money by putting it on pause and making a better product, but whatever. Whatever.
We don't make the rules, sadly.
Yeah. Also, Disney is trying to, for ABC shows, trying to make their showrunners still go.
They're like, you're required to do this, even if it's against your union or something.
Yeah. Which is not the best look, Disney. We're trying to use you to destroy DeSantis. We can't have you also being equally evil. So.
This is the house that Hallie built. And you're about to, like, crumble it, so... Hush.
Yeah, and it also means like pay the Abbott Elementary writers too, because I want that show. And you know, it brings me joy. So hopefully everybody gets their due, like I said. On to The Flash, the only Arrowverse show left standing. We're counting down to the last episode. Now we are in A New World Part 1, and Jessica will take us away on this journey that Barry also took this week.
Yeah, so we are in a whole new world, a dazzling place called Central City 2049. We are way out there in the future. The sheltered princess of this cold open is a man with an affinity for blue roses, and he's getting ready for work at Mercury Labs. We think we hear a familiar voice. Is that who I think it is? And he greets the security guard, talking about a game that they bet on. And he's like, oh, by the way, I think I lost my badge. And security guard's like, yeah, I found it. And the camera finally pans up, and it's none other than not Eddie, Thawne. So, dun, dun, dun. How does he get back into the picture? Let's pause from that and flashback to a flash forward of the present, where we get little vignettes of what Team Flash has been up to. Chester has questionable fashion taste, making a suit for Allegra. Cecile finally takes her ass home for a weekend to see her, well, not see her daughter because, you know, still no time for that. But she does talk to Joe. Keon writes in her diary, she's been, you know, sisterhood of the traveling body, like going all these different places, performing miracles for children and giving them an ice skating rink or whatever. And she's writing in her diary to Caitlin Frost about her spiritual nature journey. And finally, we get to the main event, which is West Island in their loft, now featuring heavily pregnant Iris. She is 9 months pregnant, about to pop. Barry is speeding all around, trying to baby-proof the house. Iris receives a news alert that her Red Skies article is nominated for a Pulitzer, which is a career milestone for her. Although it's something that they've been expecting, it's still pretty surprising and satisfying to get that announcement. Barry congratulates her, but suddenly, in the midst of their celebration, because West Allen cannot be happy for too long, Barry suddenly gets pulled by some kind of electrical current back 23 years to the year 2000. He cannot get back on his own. He tries. He can't get back on his own. So he initially goes to Joe for help, but struggles on how to get Joe to help him without upending the timeline and telling them that he's his daughter's six-year-old childhood friend from the future, or however old he is. I don't know. So while he's talking to Joe, he gets a little shaken because he notices the date on the desk is the date that his mother gets murdered by Eobard Thawne. So he leaves the precinct in a hurry. He tries this time to call Stein, which I guess Victor Garber actually gave him a check for a voice in, which, you know, remote work, that's pretty cool. He tries to call Stein because obviously Stein will probably get, you know, crazy science from the future more than Joe would. But Stein doesn't believe him either. It doesn't matter because while he's talking to Stein, he gets distracted by Henry and Nora, who are having a day-date. And he gets knocked over by a speedster rushing by, and then he almost gets run over by a car. So he's saved by his parents, who are very oddly overprotective of this very lost and distressed stranger. Barry tries to kind of avoid the very complicated feeling of having his parents parent him, but being unable to tell them that he's their son. Eobard finds this all incredibly amusing because he's the one that pushed Barry into the middle of the street in the first place. And he delights in tormenting Barry and forcing Barry to admit he's won. He's like, I'm about to kill you tonight. And how is it going to feel like you're just getting to see your parents, but you can't tell them anything, and you're just like miserable, and I'm so happy. So Eobard is having the best time. Meanwhile, Joe, who showed up at the scene of the car accident, picks up a strange blue crystal that was in the middle of the road, which infects him and turns into a proxy villain out to kill Barry. Barry gets a chance to, while, you know, spending time with his parents at the restaurant, and, you know, when he goes back later on, he gets a chance to tell them goodbye and tell them everything that he wished that they could know about how much he loved them and how he has such a good life now and that he has a baby on the way and all this kind of stuff. So he gets that closure that he hadn't had for 9 seasons now. And when they leave, he hears a voice and he winds up getting attacked by Cobalt Joe, Cobalt Blue Joe. But through the power of his love, channeling his love for Iris and Nora, he finds a way to disrupt the crystal's influence without killing his future father-in-law, which is very important. So now that he is a healed person and Joe is a healed person and everybody's all healed, Barry races to try to convince Thawne one last time to stop being fucking petty and focus on yourself, bro. But Thawne is too obsessed with his almost victory to take Barry seriously, leading to the full circle moment that we see in the pilot in season one of Barry and Thawne fighting in the middle of the living room. Season one, Barry seeing his season nine self, telling him not to stop stuff and to save himself, and then results in Thawne killing his mother, which promptly depletes all of Thawne's speeds and depletes all of Thawne's speed and leaves him stuck in the past with an, you know, I told you so from Barry before. Oh, and also the fact that Barry is like, you know what? This was the best day for me. It hurt, but I got so much closer, and it's all thanks to you. So that was like a final fuck you to Thawne before Barry gets time yanked again to where we do not know. Finally, we get back to not Eddie, who is working late in Mercury Labs on probably some kind of speed thing, speed work or whatever, when a mysterious lightning storm appears outside in the sky, which we have also seen before in the pilot, when Barry is also in a lab and a lightning storm outside. Lightning strikes not Eddie, giving him super speed and a gift, a file folder about a dead police officer named Eddie Thawne that looks just like him that this guy does not recognize at all. What does it mean? Episode was directed by Eric Wallace and written by Eric Wallace and Thomas Pound. So, what sparked joy in this episode?
I feel like Eric really had the cheat code in his hands, and this time he actually knew how to use it. He was like, oh my god, what if I actually go back to season one and revisit this iconic moment that we've never gotten full circle closure on? And I felt like I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, even when, like, in the moment when we realized that it was the day, you know, that his mom died, I still was like, it played out, like, obviously, like, exactly as it would, and yet it was still managed to be surprising to me, so I thought that was really good. Definitely one of the better episodes, if not the best episode of the final season. And also Grant. Grant really amped up his game. He really stepped up in this episode. I thought, you know, everyone has kind of felt a little bit like they're sleepwalking in recent weeks or in this final season as we reach the conclusion. And I thought, you know, it just feels like the writing has not necessarily been there, and then neither has the performances. But this time, Grant really was like, he was really feeling it. He went all out for his parentals. I definitely teared up a little bit in the scene where he was talking to them about, you know, everything he wanted to tell his parents. So all that was really nice. Great to see Joe again. And thank God it wasn't just to hang out with Cecile in the beginning. I was like, okay. And then he actually showed up in the past, which I thought was great. Also fun to see Cobalt Joe. Wonderful title for him. And that was like a really cool back and forth in terms of like him being like, oh, I'm the negative C-Force, and I hate you. Everyone hates Barry for some reason. God, Barry is just living his life. But everyone's out to get him. Everyone hates
Chris. Yeah, exactly. Everyone hates Barry.
Also, love Sing Sing. His hair looked great. They did very successfully make him look younger. And I just, the attitude was funny. And then, of course, Barry being like, oh, I call everyone Cap. And then he just started calling random people Cap. Like, okay. So, yeah, that was great. Also was funny how, at first, Joe was like, okay, this child is crazy. And then he was like, well, he just seems nice. So I guess I will get him this information. Like, okay. And Joe cannot say no to Barry in any universe, clearly. Except for in Earth 2. And that did not turn out well for him. So, anyway...
Poor Earth 2 Joe.
The best of the Joes. So anyway, what else? I loved, of course, getting to see very pregnant Iris, getting her Pulitzer nomination, and she and Barry were very cute in that little moment before he disappeared. I saw someone tweeted something like, oh, Iris getting her nomination and then her husband disappearing in the same scene. It's like the most Iris West Allen thing ever. And I was like, yes, that is true. She was like, well, today has been an okay day. It averaged out. what else was very good? I mean, everything. Like, I just thought the episode overall was very good, but there was literally one plot. And it was a good plot, so I'm like, what else can we say about it? I did think they did a really good job of recreating that final scene, you know, the actual fight. And, you know, even though baby Barry is not with us anymore, Logan, but, you know, we got to see a little glimpse of him again. So I was like, bittersweet, I guess. I don't know. So that is all I have to say. Good job. 2 thumbs up. Enthusiastic recommendation.
Yes, indeed. I completely agree. I thought this episode was fantastic. I was watching, and for the first time in a long time, I was like, oh my God, they're going to do it. It's going to come full circle. I've been waiting for so long. It was very exciting to be excited about the show again in this way. I think they did a great job kind of like giving us the answers we've long wanted, that basically it was season 9 Barry who saved himself and also told season 1 Barry, you'd be like, nope, you gotta let this happen. How mature of him now. So we also see like how far he's come. I loved him facing off with the superior Thawne and having those moments, like the beer, their conversation over like some beers in the bar was great. It was just like so much tension. Like he could just, you know, poke at Barry for hours and I would just be entertained because he's just so good at it. And it's just like so smug, and it was like his performance was fantastic. It's like, tell me. He's like, you win. It's like, yes, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. But he did not win at the end. So that's why I like it, because Barry got to be really smart. He knew what was going to happen. He knew exactly what was going down. And I like that he was one step ahead of Thawne in this instance, where it's usually like the reverse. I love the little shout outs to like the pilot, even when like Barry gets thrown into the dry cleaning van, but this time it reads Gamby's cleaning or whatever. So a little shout out to Gamby. Satana's restaurant.
I didn't even catch that, May. That's good.
Yes, Stein being heard in the episode anyway.
Yes.
Bloodwork's mom at the ER. That was,
yes, I love her. That.
Oh, my
yes.
God. I didn't care. Yes. Who is this yeah. thing? Why do they keep, like, focusing
yeah.
on
that? Yeah, when they said Rasa. And then it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
All those, like, little things. I was like, oh, look, it's all there. So that was fabulous. It was, like, a nice way to write in everyone who would have pretty much been around like in 2000, like where they would have been at that time. It was really nice. And it just felt like a lived in world again, because I feel like they've been reusing Star Labs a lot for the last several seasons. And it was really nice to kind of see like Henry and Nora walking around, and the, you know, CCPD and the hospital and all of these different places we got to kind of glimpse. So it felt like the Flash was part of the city again. It was really nice. And it was just like a really well-paced episode in general. Like Barry got his closure, And it was really nice to see those moments with him and his parents, like them even being kind to the stranger. I'm not sure if they felt like something for him in that instance, but they were very nice to him. And it was like in a way where he felt love from them, very obviously, because they took care of him and were worried about this rando man who always happens to look like Nora's father. So that was really sweet, and I do felt like it was nice closure. Like he felt more at peace. Like he was still sad about it, but he is not the Barry from season one for sure. So it was nice to see that growth for him. Getting to see Joe in a different capacity in general was really nice, because I feel like we haven't seen Jesse L. Martin act on this show in so long. Of course, like the Barry and Iris scene at the start was super cute. I loved seeing. I didn't think that we were going to see full-bellied Iris, but it was really nice to see that. Poor Iris. Like, she's just stressed. Like, the last few days of her pregnancy is like everything's going to happen. But it was really nice and a sweet moment to like how proud Barry was that she was nominated, and reminding her that she earned this award, and it was all her, pretty much, was super cute. So yeah, it was just a really great episode where, for the first time in a long time, like, I'm ready to see what comes next. And I feel like they really set up something interesting with who I assume is like Malcolm Thawne or something. So that's going to be really interesting to see Rick in a role that is not maybe such a nice guy. So I'm really excited to see where this is going, because I feel like the setup was really great, and the wrap up to the season one plots and OG Reverse Flash was fabulous.
Yeah, I love that there was so much nostalgia in this episode, and this for this to be like the first part of the end, it really did feel like a satisfying beginning that paid homage to, or satisfying beginning of the end that paid homage to the pilot that started it all. Once we got past the other people, the other vignettes, I felt like it really kind of like kicked off. I love seeing the Wes Allen scene that we did get with heavily pregnant Iris. I loved it. It really felt like, you know, like a family, and the fact that they were like celebrating like her Pulitzer, and they both seem to be like in a really healthy place. And then of course, like, Barry gets like pulled out. I do think it's interesting that they put in that he was like putting in meta dampeners around the loft, because I feel like that's a callback to, was it season 5 when, you know, Nora's all put out that Iris put dampeners on her, and here Barry is like baby proof in the house with meta dampeners. Yeah. So I thought that was a nice, you know, then, you know, Barry wasn't around, but now it was his idea. Yeah, exactly. It's still a logical idea, whether it was Iris and baby Nora, or versus where it's Barry and Iris together. So that was cool to have that in there. And then just being in the past, I thought it was really cool to see, like, CCBD, seeing before he became captain. Becca actually pointed out on Twitter, it's like, this is the first comic accurate looking scene on TV, because the way that they styled him, similar to how he's styled in the comics. So that was pretty interesting. Seeing like Barry kind of be first, like, he's trying to figure out stuff on his own. So first he tries to like run, and that doesn't work. And so now he's trying to like reach out and get help without people knowing. So he's going about it like in a smart way, I feel like. And he got like the references, like you said, to like Tina McGee. I did not recognize like Yambi or the Rosso reference. Those are actually cooler. I did like the parallel to the laundry crash. I thought that was really cool. The fact that we get Matt Eobard back is the best, because he just plays it so well, and how it's so, like, I feel like Tom's Eobard just feels like condescending and superior, where Matt's Eobard has like the right amount of petty
deranged.
to really Yeah, like the right amount of pettiness to like, especially compared to like Barry, to just really hit it on all the right notes. I love seeing Barry's and Grant's like portrayal of like the emotional turmoil of, you know, he's trying to be like the mature and responsible person, and then he's hit with, you know, here are his parents in love, on a date, happy, alive, and how they kind of jump into it. Just, if they were alive, if they had been alive like whole life, and how sugary sweet their family dynamic would be, because they're all just such nice, lovely people. And so when you're like hit with that, like he knows he's not supposed to spend so much time around them, but how can you not when they're your parents and, you know, they meet sad ends later in life? Why would you not want to? This is the one thing that he's been kind of like trying to get back to for seasons. And here he is having to like run away from it. So like the whole emotional turmoil of that, I think Grant played really well. And I liked the resolution of that, of not running away from stuff, but running towards stuff. And how that led him to, you know, talking to his parents one last time. And even though they didn't know him, it felt like they did. And it felt like they received it. Like Nora, like she like received it. And I feel like that's like a really nice closure for him in that whole arc. Loved the, how we kind of see the initial like fight scene, the thing that started it all, kind of play out. The fact that Barry went back there not to try to stop Thawne, but try to like save Thawne, I thought was really interesting. And of course, Thawne did not believe it at all. But that even made it even much better when it proved out Barry was right. And like the realization that Barry was right, that just like took him over the edge. And so all of that was like really satisfying. I love seeing Jesse L. Martin be able to use his acting ability and his vocal, you know, his acting range and chops. So when he's like possessed by like the crystal, I felt like he did like such a good job there, because I feel like this is a different part of not even just Joe on the show that he's gotten to do, like be like a villain type thing. And I think he played the sinister part of that crystal really well. What else? I just think it was like a pretty, really good episode.
I forgot to mention when Barry has to, like, is remembering Iris and Nora to power himself up. That was really great.
Yeah, love that.
Agreed, that was great.
And it's kind of like, you know, he had, like, it's the family, because he had just, the family he had just let go of, and now he's thinking about the family that he has.
He's coming
his
home.
Family in the past, now his family in the present is what's fueling him. So, like, before, he was always, like, in the back of his mind, the family that he lost. And now, like, what's fueling him moving forward is the family that he's creating with Iris and with baby Nora. So that's awesome. Great, 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 great. And I love the mystery of not Thawne, of not Eddie. The opening sequence I felt was, like, a little bit too long, because I'm just like, who is it? But I like the mystery, and I love the parallel as well, because there's, like, a ton of parallels in here. But that was another one that I thought was really cool, how they did the parallel of the lightning storm and not Eddie in Mercury Labs with Barry in his lab, and how that all kind of played out. And really interesting to see how that expands. We know the crystal came from 2049, so we're assuming that this Thawne is from 2049, but is it the same Eddie, a different timeline? Now we have confirmation that there's a multiverse, so is it a different Earth Eddie? All these kind of stuff. And you feel like you want to like actually predict and theorize again, which is great. Great way to end the series, which I hope it stays this strong throughout. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. What did not spark joy about this episode in particular?
I mean, there's very little that didn't spark joy, but the little vignettes of how everyone is doing, I mean, obviously we have to show the whole cast, but it reminded me of how little I, like, really care about the cast as, like, a cohesive whole at this moment, like, this iteration of the cast. Allegra and Chester was cute. That part was fine. But, like, Cecile, you know, bless her heart. All I was thinking is, how come we're seeing Joe now and not at Barry's party last week? What is this? And the Keown one was so strange. Like, I understand the concept of writing a letter to someone who's gone. Like, obviously, I've done that. But Keown doesn't know these people, A. And B, why was she, like, so, like, peppy about it? It was, like, a really weird, like, Disney Channel voiceover. Like, oh my god, friends, today, this week, we're gonna do this. And it seemed like a really, like, sloppy way to try to bridge the gap of, like, what her powers are or whatever. On the Flash podcast, we were talking about this yesterday, and I accidentally made Vanessa cry because I was like, the only person that would be writing a letter to Caitlin was Cisco. And she started crying. But, and also, where the fuck is Cisco? Why is yet another week passed when we're doing all of the possible flashbacks and callbacks to season one and still no Cisco? Does Cisco know Caitlin is dead? They mentioned Argus, like Keown is getting help from Argus or whatever, right, with her powers and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And Cisco? What about Cisco? Cisco is Argus. Do they just say Argus when they mean Cisco? Are they not allowed to say Cisco? Is it legally unacceptable? We don't know.
Carlos put that in his contract. You may not utter my name ever.
Pretend I died. I'm so sorry. You know, would have loved to have, I'm sure we're going to check back in because at the end of the episode, Barry jumps to a different time, not to the present, is what I assume. So hopefully next week we'll check back in with like how Iris is feeling about this fact. So I can't begrudge them for not showing me that this week, but I just hope we get it next week. And then also, finally, the pettiest of my dislikes is that I would have liked Joe to answer the phone. He is in the episode, so I would have loved to have gotten the moment of Joe hearing that his daughter is nominated for the Pulitzer before Barry disappears, instead of this just being an excuse for her not to call him, for them not to speak, and us never to see it. Now I'm done.
Yes. Mine are also small, like Keown mentioning Mark, like it would be right if there was just one person I could talk to. I'm like, no, why are we bringing him back?
Because we paid him series regular rates and he hasn't been in for like four episodes probably.
It's so frustrating. I was like, of course it's Mark, this torture. So I'm not looking forward to that, and I do feel like that sequence was odd, even though it was really lovely to look at her apartment, which is now very nice with all the plants and stuff around it. Joe and Cecile, like, Joe's retired and Cecile doesn't really work. How do they afford a second house? Like, they're paying two mortgages. I don't understand. Somebody needs to make it make sense. But also just in general, like, I didn't need that update. And especially like that lingering shot on Cecile's face. I was like, is she supposed to emote? I don't know what's happening. That's just me disliking the character in general. And then like Chester, like,
say your piece.
yes, because I was like, this is usually when people linger on an actor, it's like, you know, I'm thinking about something, or we're supposed to kind of gauge like what's going on in their head, but it was a very blank. There's nothing going on in her head. And like Chester just has terrible taste in costumes. I'm so sad. It's just very upsetting. Otherwise, that part was fine. But like, yeah, it was just like all of those things were unnecessary, and I could have used like just more West Island scenes at the beginning, like them getting ready, like a brief montage of them getting ready for baby Nora, besides like catching up with the rest of the cast. So, yeah.
You know what confuses me, because wasn't it last week's episode Chester was giving Allegra this necklace or whatever that was supposed to turn into her suit? Where is that design? Like, why are you coming out with like a coat of many colors? And how is that even remotely?
I think that the necklace broke, right? Somebody broke the necklace.
I know it broke, but you still built it. Like, he still has the design. Oh, that's true. So where is that design? And how did he think that that was supposed to, like, protect her on the field at all? Like a trench.
He made it look like a clown.
It was, like, heavy. There was, you know, is it even bulletproof? Like, what? Like, what was your thought process there? Like, that just didn't make any kind of sense to me. And yeah, I agree that the Joe and Cecile was the least necessary of the vignettes, just to prove that I guess that she does go home sometimes on the weekend. I don't know. But yeah, I could have like done without that. I do wish, like, I would even be better if it was just like scenes in the flash forward. Primarily, like, West Allen focus. Like, other people could be there because they got to get paid or whatever. But I would like to see more of the progression of Iris from no bump to middle bump to bigger bump to biggest bump. And, right. Like, and, you know, that would have been, like, better to see kind of progression. Because I feel like it was not really clear how far forward they flashed. You just had Keon saying, like, these last 9 months. But I feel like, if it was 9 months, like, Iris would have popped by now because she's been pregnant for a minute. So, I don't know.
I think, like, 9 months since Keon came into existence, right? Technically.
Is that what it was? Like, but she was pregnant, like, immediately when Keon was there. So, I don't know.
Right. I think when we left her off, she was 2 or 3 months. So, like, 6 or 7 months, I guess, have passed. Yeah. But I agree. It's not clear. So yeah.
Yeah, it's not really clear. I wish you could have like seen, you know, time passage. That would have been helpful. Especially, you could definitely tell that as Iris got bigger, that time was passing in these different like, you know, things. And you could still use Keon's freaking voiceover because she's talking about all the stuff that she's been doing and growing in the last 9 months. You could have shown that while stuff is happening with other people, and you can tell the passage by Iris's belly getting bigger. So I feel like that could have been smoothed out a little bit more. I think I said the thing about like the beginning being a little bit drawn out because I was just like, where are we? So it was a little bit long. I did like the mystery, but it did feel like a little bit long for an opening sequence of someone that we don't know, or story that we don't know. What else?
Oh, why is his last name not Thawne? Hello, Malcolm Gilman or Gilgur, whatever.
Is that what it said on the badge? Because I couldn't read the
badge. It was Malcolm something with a G. And Malcolm Thawne is Cobalt Blue. So, yeah. Like, I get the Malcolm part, but I was like, why are you making his last name something else? What is this? There you go. Dislike.
Well, apparently, and someone I think mentioned this on Twitter at some point, was that the last name was the name of the doctor that delivered the twins that became Malcolm Thawne.
Okay. So this is before he finds out he's a Thawne.
Yeah, probably.
There we go. Okay. Okay. Just like the theories fly.
I think we only, what did Anita have to say? I think she was the only one that sent in feedback.
Yeah, so I'm surprised.
You fell off.
I know. So Anita says, hello, ladies. Roses are red. Roses are not blue, which is how I first suspected this was the unfolding of Cobalt Blue's malicious plan against Barry. I've been waiting for this guy all season. Like the opening sequence with the blue energy field kidnapping Barry, I recognized Russo's mother right away. And for the last time, Eric, the audience couldn't care less about Cecile's rear and in leather pants, okay? but first, domestic West Allen, a heavily pregnant Iris enjoying alone time with her doting husband is peak West Allen. Getting the Pulitzer nomination moments before a blue energy field snatches Barry is peak Iris, isn't it? Barry's still fumbling awkwardly through time travel scenarios, I see. No alias, no quick debriefs on the people he'll meet. Still forgetting to bring along Gideon as his wingman. At least this is the last time the CW's Barry Allen will charge through the time-space continuum's delicate bone china shop like a cocaine bear. If Eobard did drag Barry back to the Splinter timeline, then how did he know to push Barry toward the Allens? I'm curious about what Blue Force gave Barry this last grab at closure. And why does Barry keep indulging Eobard? Thawne has the nerve to keep taunting Barry with, "I need to hear you say it. Boy, tell him to watch your victory and choke on it." It's the plan or the satisfaction, Eobard. You cannot have both. Barry should apologize for caring more about saving a crowd than bruising Eobard's ego. We got news for you, Lesser Fallen. Heroes are selfless, you know what? And you will never be one.
That was one of my... I mean, it's within, like, the context of Eobard's petty. It's, you know, classic Eobard. But also, like, why the hell should Barry apologize for saving a crowd? Which makes me think that Eobard, which I feel like is probably what happened in the comics... anyway, but Eobard is the one that put them in danger so that he could save them, and then Barry saved them, so he was like, "You destroyed my great plan." Like, why can't you go save somebody else? Like, why did that have to be the start of your...
But there's so many people.
Like, come on. Anyways.
Yes, he's, you know, Fallen's gonna thong. I don't care how the rest of the gang is doing, I really don't. And unless Joe is on video call with Iris or returning from a visit to Wally, he doesn't need to be on my screen. This show has really destroyed Joe for me, and I never tried to treat Francine fairly. Side tangent, we're supposed to believe that clean-cut Francine, who showed up in season 2, was a self-absorbed junkie who raised her son in squalor and trained him to help her shoot up. I wish showrunners like Eric would get some therapy instead of plaguing the airwaves with their issues with Black women. Henry and Nora are such concerned, kind strangers. Seeing that was moving. If Barry had mirrored Henry's behavior or seen Nora do something that maybe Nora would later do, their quick bond might have made more sense to me, but I'll take this too. What I won't take is this show referring to Joe as Barry's father. Why do the writers keep throwing that incest suggestion out there? The shade is giving me passive-aggressive resistance to a Black Iris West and and may plague their careers for what they've helped the racists to inflict on Candace for 8+ years. The green screen of Thawne running looked so cheap and cheesy. Matt Letcher doesn't even look like he was jogging in place. He looks like he's just moving his arms sitting on a chair.
Well, according to Key, Candace said nobody doesn't like Grant. So.
That's true. We have confirmation.
Oh, Key said that?
Keenan, yeah, like forever ago.
Oh, okay.
Even with its many aggravating flaws, this multi-episode arc got off to a super strong start. I'm guessing that Malcolm Thawne using the Gilmore alias for some reason. Guys, if this is Barry's mysterious twin from comic history, what if he engineered this whole thing to steal Barry's origin story and hero's destiny? I just don't know what bringing Barry back to get closure about Nora's fixed point murder accomplishes. Is it a consolation prize? I'm sure it's a convoluted, shaky reason they think they can pass off on junior high schoolers. But then again, I've never liked cop-out time paradox stories. Sorry for the rant. There were delights, but there were also times I wanted to give the show a prime Logan Roy fuck off. Thank you so much, Anita. Do we have, I guess, move into prediction? Sorry, I moved into host mode.
Well, I was going to say, like, this would be the first time, because we didn't do this last week, but this would be the first time in a while, I feel like, I actually want to see, like, what predictions that you have for the mystery of not Eddie, and all, like, all the stuff that's supposed to happen in the finale. Like, what are your theories?
I don't have theories so much as, like, a lot of questions. Like, I want to know why he lives in the West House. He's not wearing a ring, so maybe he's not married to, if he's, like, from Earth Prime's 2049, he's obviously not married to Iris, but I also want to know why he's there. And I feel like he'll be possessed by, I guess, the blue crystals at some point.
Right. Yeah. I think he's going to have to combine with the negative speed force. He's going to find out that he's a Thawne. I imagine that's still going to happen. And then that'll make him want to look into the speed force and he'll join the negative speed force, which is the Thawne one, is what I assume.
I feel like, because there's a couple different routes that they could go, right? You could go the route that Anita was suggesting in her feedback, that maybe there's this, like, they go with the comic twin origin story and Malcolm is trying to steal the life that Barry got and he didn't, or whatever. I feel like, I can't remember if this was Married to the Real. What's the husband's name, Trey? I don't know if it was him or so. I saw it somewhere on, like, Twitter. So it's not, like, my theory originally, but I like it a lot. And I feel like it should be hyped up some more, that if we're still connecting parallels from season one, like maybe Eddie didn't die. Because I feel like that's one thing that always kind of like bothered me, and they've covered up like timey-wimey bullshit, is that if Eddie is Thawne's or Eobard's like ancestor, but he died and Thawne didn't die, like where is the logic in that? So,
oh, maybe, do you think he was flung to the past?
He got,
or the
like,
future?
The singularity, like, threw him up in 2049. And so he is our Eddie, but doesn't have memory of it. And has been living as, like, Malcolm Gilmore or whatever.
I like that, because it would sort of be, like, the whole Iris is from the future storyline, but it's not Iris is from the future, but Eddie is from the future.
And it's also, like, the lightning storm that gave Barry his powers is the Speed Force, obviously, and so the lightning storm that gives Malcolm his powers is the negative Speed Force. And this, what if you like go back the previous season when Thawne basically self-imploded, he was like the negative Kavanaugh Thawne self-imploded, he was like the negative Speed Force that went somewhere. So maybe he is the lightning storm created to give Malcolm powers, would make the most sense. And also would make the most sense why he would give him a file of himself deceased. If he is the real Eddie, then this is supposed to be a clue that you are not who you think you are. And that he is Eddie. And like once Eddie like regains his memories, then he'll be like, Barry stole my life. Because literally Barry did. After he died, Barry swooped right on in and got what I see as Iris. He's married to Iris, he's about to have a kid, and that's all stuff that Eddie thought was going to be his life. So I feel like that would be really cool to see play out, and it would give, like, a lot of, like, motivation to Eddie to becoming Cobalt Blue. So I really think that that could work.
Kind of, and I think that it was mentioned too that like the final villain would be connected to both Barry and Iris, right? So like Eddie would make sense, because otherwise Cobalt Blue wouldn't be connected to her.
Yeah, directly. Our Eddie, yeah, would make sense. Why he's in the West House in 2049?
Yeah, that's the weird part.
Is it supposed to be the West House, or is it like? They just only have one house set. I don't know. Like it's the West House or the West Island Loft. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I do have a question, because they mentioned this again about like how house. Barry, maybe finally, and then like Malcolm Thawne bought it. That's hilarious. Do we think that like they'll actually show the moment that Barry saves the crowd in the future, or is that just kind of be like a story that we're
like an anecdote? I don't know that they would actually show it, but it could happen. Well, I don't know. It wouldn't happen. I feel like the farthest they're gonna go is 2049, and I feel like it wouldn't happen then. Like it's too early to happen then. But could be. Who knows? You know what else is like niggling on my thought process here? When Singh is like in the hospital. And he's, like, searching for the source of, like, the explosions and everything. And Barry does his thing. And the lightning just, like, disrupts and, like, goes around the hall. It passes through Singh. And I'm like, and Singh didn't really do much else other than kind of follow Joe and then this part. So I'm like, is that supposed to mean something? Like, he got hit with a lot of super powered charged lightning, so like I don't think he has powers in the comics, but it just feels very weird to me that he got hit with a wave of super lightning stuff and that not play into anything else. So we'll see. Any other thoughts?
Just curiosity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do see that they are finally going to come back around with the Flash Vanishes in Crisis letter newspaper article, which is good because I know people were concerned about Oliver having stolen it in Crisis. So, so Barry will get his rightful article back.
Do we have a Lady with Gumption of this Nora. Episode. I guess it has to be Nora.
Yeah. Yeah. Only Nora for just, ever. You know, letting being a kind hand stranger. On the kindness of strangers.
And a young man exactly. who seemed very confused and needed a mom. So I guess that's it.
For just being an overall good person.
For being a good Samaritan. Nora Allen is our Lady with Gumption of the Week. Thank you for joining us. If you have feedback that you were just late and you still want to include it, send it to us anyway, ladiesofbegumption@gmail.com, or send us ask on Tumblr, ladiesofbegumption.tumblr.com. Next week is part two. Come back. Let's see if our theories are right. And you can follow along with us as we live tweet on at DCTVGumption on Twitter. See you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.